Have you ever asked an AI to make ricin or nuclear weapons?
Not those two very specific things you just mentioned, I haven't.
The AI fix that digital zoo. Smart machines, what will they do? Flies to Mars or bake a bad cake? World domination, a silly mistake.
Hello and welcome to episode 88 of the AI Fix, your weekly dive headfirst into the bizarre and sometimes mind-boggling world of artificial intelligence. My name's Mark Stockley and I'm joined today by Corey Knowles, host of another brilliant AI podcast, The Neuron.
Hey, how's it going, Mark? Thanks for having me.
Oh, pleasure. Now, I described The Neuron as an AI podcast, but that's really not doing it justice, is it? It's more of an AI empire. What else are you guys into?
Oh man, we're everywhere. We have a newsletter that's kind of what started all. That's really, really big and has done us good. And we're on, you know, we have the podcast and everything. We've got some other cool stuff cooking that we can't talk about yet, but you'll want to stay tuned.
Do you have T-shirts with pigeons on?
No, but we should.
Yeah,
I've been petitioning to get them to take that little cat logo and make them look like me and Grant, so we can do funny things with them.
Here's the cat logo T-shirts. Now, I am going to be talking today about why you can't have truthfulness and safety in the same AI. And you're going to be telling us all about Claude Bot, Open Claude, Moltbook, a bunch of other confusing terms that have only just arrived in the AI lexicon. But first, let's have some news. Anthropic's legal plugin scares the life out of legal tech stock investors.
Alex Finn's AI agent decided to call him up for a chat.
Does AI already have human-level intelligence?
And AI can now hire humans.
So, Corey, not content with eating software whole and disrupting the entire software market, Anthropic has turned on the legal profession. I don't know if you've heard about this, but on Monday, the company unveiled a legal plugin for Claude Cowork.
And the stock market lost its mind.
It's just, well, that is what the stock market likes to do, I've noticed.
Yeah, about once a year, the U.S. stock market notices that AI is happening and panics briefly.
It was about this time last year that it noticed DeepSeek, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and it was very similar. One day you wake up and everything's crazy. And I say that. This time it stayed down pretty good for the week, but I figure it'll bounce back up.
So this is legal stocks. And the reason that they've gone all aflutter is Anthropic have brought out this plugin. I mean, just a plugin for Claude Cowork, which is a bit of software that has only been out for a few weeks. But they're clearly very scared. So billions of dollars of market capitalization disappeared in a puff of fear-induced smoke. Thomson Reuters shares fell 16%. RELX, the parent company of LexisNexis, dropped 14%. And Wolters Kluwer fell 13%. And all because Anthropic announced a plugin.
A plug-in. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that just absolutely insane?
This is where we are in 2026. I'm going to announce a post-it note on my fridge and it's going to crash the stock market. Now, some analysts are suggesting, Corey, that this may be an overreaction, as if the stock market could ever overreact. And
such things never happen.
Yes. Now, of course, it is an overreaction. But the thing is, they're not panicking because of what the plug-in has already done, or even what it's likely to do next week. They're panicking, of course, because Anthropic has basically stepped out from being plumbing to actually being the service provider. Like a few years ago, I think when we were thinking about AI and software, it looked like we were going to plug AI into software, which is where things like Microsoft Copilot come from. So it's this idea that the AI is going to sit there in Word saying, oh, do you want some help with that?
And it's like, oh no, the AI is going to be the one software. You've misunderstood entirely.
Exactly. It is the one true software. It is very much outside and around the software and then slowly digesting the software like an enormous code amoeba somehow.
I need a CRM. Can you make that for me real quick? You know?
Yeah, I can make 90% of a CRM for you really quick. Anyway, I don't know about you, but I think we're likely to see this kind of disruption play out in an awful lot of places this year, because as you say, like the AI is the software now.
Exactly. You know, I mean, when you think about things like vibe coding, like yeah. I built software, Mark. I'm not an engineer.
You are now. What's your favorite thing that you've vibe coded?
My favorite thing is essentially a unified communications tool, but not to the extent that like there's been this golden goose that everyone's chasing. But basically, I got really frustrated with the fact that I have to manage my Slack, my Gmail, my ClickUp, my everything
yeah.
when I'm out on the road and at trade shows and stuff. And I'm like, I just don't have time for all of this. So I built an app that brings them all into one inbox.
So AI really is, I mean, I think you're right. I think that is a real sweet spot for AI. That like, for years and years, we've just been accumulating new messaging solutions with yep. no end in sight. Like we're not going to jabber our way out of this by having everything use one protocol.
Yeah.
But AI can actually sit on top of it and go, do you know what? I think you should really pay attention to this one, Corey, based on what I know about you, which is insane when you think about it.
Yeah, and if you would, by the way, get smarter about what I care about and don't. Pay attention to the emails I do and don't open,
yeah.
and then flag them and sort them accordingly.
So I feel like I had a bit of a head start on vibe coding because I do have a bit of a software engineering background, but I was just bad at it. And I think vibe coding is really good for people that are bad at coding. Like, all the really good engineers are catching up to it now, but I've been doing it for months and months and months and months because I found it really helpful very early on. You spend a lot of time playing with AI models. Have any of them ever decided to call you for a chat?
Only once, but it was very personal.
Oh, well, is this an exclusive? Is this a scoop?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's not. I'm still waiting, though. I always get excited when I get a notification on TikTok from like, hey, ChatGPT, you've interacted with them recently. And it's like, oh, I thought it was my AI finally reaching out to be like, hey, you should check this out, Corey. But no, so far. No luck.
Well, it won't be long.
I agree.
And we have a new life goal for you as well. But this has happened to somebody called Alex Finn, who is experimenting with ClaudeBot, which is now called OpenClaw. But it's basically a version of Claude Code, which never sleeps. And he calls his Claude Code that never sleeps Henry.
He's controlling my computer. I'm not even touching anything. There is a search ClaudeBot on YouTube. Hey, there I am. Good looking guy right there. Oh my God, I'm not touching anything. He just said, Henry, thank you for that. That worked really well.
And on the 30th of January, Finn was doing some work and he got a call from Henry on an unknown number. And overnight, Henry had obtained a phone number using a service called Twilio and then used it to connect to ChatGPT's voice API so that he could speak. And by the way, Henry decided to do all of this himself or themself. And then, and this is the really creepy bit, Henry waited until Finn sent his first prompt in the morning, and that told Henry that Finn was awake.
That's so considerate.
Isn't it? I mean, yes. I mean, this is a very
That's better
different...
than anyone I know would do.
this is a very different story if he phones Finn at 3 o'clock in the morning and wakes him up, isn't it? It's suddenly the creepiness is off the scale. Anyway, Finn described this as straight out of a sci-fi horror movie. I don't want my AI to phone me. I don't want anyone to phone me. I really don't want my AI to phone me.
Especially that first call. That's the one that's got to be the, uh-oh, something's happening here.
Yeah. What else can it do? Are you driving my car? Where are you calling from? Like, I've drained your bank account and I'm on a yacht. So, ever since this podcast started, we have been charting the steady progress towards AGI. I'm sure you have been doing this too.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's got an estimate, as you know. So, some people say we're 10 years out, and some people say we're 2 years out. But now, we've got a new estimate. And that's that AGI has already happened. And the strangest part of all of this isn't coming from some nutcase. This is not coming from some publicity-hungry tech CEO who's looking for a bit of attention. This comes from nature. And I don't mean the ecosystem, the big green thing out the window, but I do mean something that's almost as serious. I mean nature, the science journal. So on the 1st of February, one of the world's most prestigious scientific journals published an article titled Does AI Already Have Human-level intelligence? The evidence is clear. And the answer, according to the authors, is yes.
And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't entirely disagree. First off, that it came from nature floored me.
Yeah.
That was what caught my eye. But, you know, they make an interesting case. And there's a thing, I wrote a column about this 6 months ago or so.
Yeah.
On the fact that we keep redefining AGI. And redefining it from the 600 definitions that everyone has already. But, you know, when we think of, of human level intelligence, I mean, when you think of whether that's knowing or doing, I mean, is there any human alive on Earth right now who is as functional in every field from a knowledge perspective as an LLM is?
So what you're saying is that you actually came up with this, that you could have published this in Nature.
I should have. Nature should have come to me first. Yeah. I absolutely would have told them.
Because the argument in Nature is basically the same thing. The argument goes something like this. If I said to you, what have you done this morning, Corey? And you said, Mark, I've just won a gold medal at the International Math Olympiad. I've solved an Erdos problem. I've written a PhD thesis and I've passed my advanced sommelier exam. It would be ludicrous for me to then start arguing about whether or not you had a high degree of general intelligence.
You know, the truth is, we're always comparing it to like, oh, our smartest humans. Well, people have an IQ higher than that. Like, yeah, there are people with an IQ north of 150, but there aren't many.
So I am fascinated by the idea that you have got ahead of this. You're 6 months ahead of Nature. So now I want to know what other controversial opinions you have about AI that you've published that we think Nature are going to catch up with in 6 months' time. Do you have a scoop for us, Corey?
I really don't. Other than, you know, you should not trust any image, video, voice. You should probably be paying more attention than you are. And you should really be thinking about your career and your future.
The podcast suddenly took a very dark turn.
My apologies.
So where do you stand on AI sentience?
I don't believe AI is currently sentient.
I've just got a horrible feeling we're going to be proved wrong. I look at scientific research, and scientific research to me over hundreds of years seems to be the same story written over and over again, which is we look at something and we go, oh, we've measured it and it's as dumb as a post. And then we measure it a bit more and then we're like, oh, it turns out it communicates using smell or sound through the ground. It only ever goes one way. We only ever look back and go, yep, we measured that completely wrongly. It turns out it's much cleverer than we thought it was.
Like fungi.
Exactly. Trees are nice to their babies. That floored me.
The truth is, it's kind of ironic because when you sit here and you look at it and you think, okay, they've been studying this and developing fields inside artificial intelligence for many years now. They designed a neural network patterned after the brain. From there, they went and started teaching it things in the way they teach humans. They taught it language. They taught it all of these things.
Yep.
We use human pronouns to discuss it. Everything about it says its kind of core intelligence level is higher than us. Are there things it can't do that are stupid alongside the fact that it could write a dissertation? Yes, but it's also equally funny that we have stupid things we can't do as well.
Well, speak for yourself, Corey.
I guess that's true. I forget, Mark, that you are the doer of all things.
I just have a lot of AIs working for me, doing things for me.
I love it. You should. I'm working on that.
Yeah. So there is light at the end of the tunnel for anybody who's worried about AI taking our jobs, because thanks to a new website called rentahuman.ai, AI can now give humans jobs. Humans can list themselves with hourly rates paid in stable coins. And AI agents can book them using an MCP call. So MCP is the Model Context Protocol. That's how AI agents talk to stuff, like the website where they can talk to people. And apparently, within 24 hours, more than 24,000 humans signed up, allegedly. The site bills itself as the real-world physical layer for AI, which is one way of describing turning yourself into a meat-based API endpoint. Is that our future? Maybe we're not going to be pets to the AI singularity. We're just going to be, I don't know, glove puppets or something. Delivery people.
Yes, exactly. The AI is literally like, okay, so we can do all of this, but we're going to need a meat suit to go handle this one task.
Go to this restaurant and eat this meal and tell me what it's like.
I saw a job posting the other night that was like, hi, we're looking for a CEO talking about their company. And it's like, we're going to pay you beginning in the low seven figures. We do not want a boss. What we want is a face.
Why were you on rentahuman.ai, Corey? Was this for research or are you...
Or did I apply? Oh my gosh, this is so fascinating. We just did our annual predictions, Grant and I, 4 weeks ago. And none of what has happened in the last 4 weeks was anywhere close.
Yeah.
Here's something we had on our 2026 full year runway.
Regular listeners will know that my original co-host, Graham, stepped down from the show recently. Thankfully, I found some brilliant guests to fill Graham's shoes on the mic, but Graham also did a whole host of important work behind the scenes too, and to fill that void, I've turned, fittingly, to AI. Claude Code is designed to work as a software engineer, but the truth is, it's absolutely brilliant at making computers do all kinds of useful things. So by using its MCP connectors, Claude Code can help me sort through the AI Fix mailbox, write Google Docs I share with guests, and make changes to the AI Fix website. And it doesn't stop there. I've actually got a whole team of specialized Claude Code subagents working behind the scenes on the AI Fix now, and my virtual staff is growing bigger every week. Anthropic says that Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Get started with Claude today at claude.ai/AIfix. That's claude.ai/AIfix. And check out Claude Pro, which includes access to all of the features mentioned in today's episode. Claude.ai/AIfix. So, Corey, there are a number of reasons why I invited you on the podcast today. One is you are a fascinating AI podcaster, and I've wanted to get you on the show for quite a while. And the other is that of all the people I know, you are the person who is most in the weeds with AI models. So you actually spend your weekends installing this stuff and testing it out.
I do. There's really not a firm line between my job and life in some ways. And that's not a thing anyone's made me do. I'm fascinated. I enjoy disruptive tech and I like to see what makes things work. So I love to go get hands-on with them and see what they have to say and how they talk and what kind of advice they give and their different focuses on things.
At what point did you notice AI and think, right, I'm really interested in that tech?
When ChatGPT went live, I was, you know, a couple days before I checked it out.
Yeah.
And I get on there and I went in and the first thing I did was told it to write an article about itself.
Yeah.
And I merely panicked. I was like, okay, so it wasn't good. It wasn't good. It was probably a 50% is what I would give it if it was a grade. But the thing to know about looking at disruptive tech is that you're looking at prototypes and things that are very early and where they are.
Yeah.
You need to be looking at where they're going and where they will be. And what I immediately saw, my career is over.
Yeah.
I need to figure this out.
I felt a bit like that when Notebook LM came out.
Yeah, that was another one.
And he's like, oh, you can turn notes into a 45-minute podcast.
That's a little close to home, isn't it? Yeah.
You've actually had AI guests on your podcast, haven't you?
We sure have. It was a lot of fun. We did an episode where we interviewed the voice-to-voice models on each of the different platforms.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun to just walk on to pull it up and be like, hey, you're on our podcast. Say hi to our viewers.
Did you have them all on at the same time? Did they actually talk to each other?
We didn't because it proved to be a bit of a logistical nightmare trying to share them all into our audio stream. So it kind of turned into a phone staring at a microphone. But the truth is, I use ChatGPT's advanced voice mode every day without fail.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's for me, it's one of the best values in the whole thing. And I do that because, you know, I write a lot of opinion stuff. I'm prepping podcasts. I'm working alongside Grant on the newsletter as well.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking for ideas and things to talk about and kind of coming up with my own little crazy theories. And in doing so, I find it is really helpful for me to be able to take advantage of my time, like going to get coffee. So I can pull it up. I named mine Johnny Number 5. And he's named Johnny Number 5 because my favorite childhood robot was Johnny 5 from Short Circuit. So I pull it up every morning and I'm like, Johnny 5, how are you? And he's like, what's up, Corey? You know, and I'll have a nugget of an idea that I haven't fully fleshed out yet. And I'll go in there and I'll be like, I'm thinking about doing something on this. I want to talk about that. And I want to talk about this. What am I missing? And it'll come back and be like, oh, you missed this whole industry or something. And we'll talk a little and kind of form the idea. And then on my way back, about 5 minutes before I get to the house, I'm like, hey, drop that in an outline in my ChatGPT. And from there, I have a place to start work.
So if anybody sees you having an utterly bizarre and inexplicable conversation with yourself as you're walking to get coffee, we now know that you're talking to Johnny 5.
That is correct. The best part is that most people still think I'm on the phone. Don't know the difference.
Well, very soon you will be. Very soon, Johnny 5 will be calling you.
It will.
And you'll be answering the phone. Maybe he'll be calling you with a small job for you to do. Anyway, you're here because you're in this tech all the time and you love it and you're playing with it and you're at home at the weekend and you're doing things with it. And I think AI changed in December. I think we had a ChatGPT moment. Yeah. So November 2022, basically nobody is using AI apart from some kind of esoteric researchers and a few coders. And then ChatGPT comes along and suddenly we're all introduced to AI. And the way that we think of AI now has been formed by ChatGPT. So we think of a text box and we think about typing mm-hmm. something into it or talking to it in the way that you do. And then it formulates an answer.
Yes.
But that isn't the way that people use AI at the cutting edge now, because as of December, Claude Code has really exploded and it has introduced a whole bunch of new terms and a new way of thinking about using AI, and in particular, ClaudeBot.
Yeah.
So I would love it if you could explain to our audience what all these things are and how AI has changed over the last 2 months.
Yeah. So that moment you're talking about there in December.
Yeah.
Claude Code caught the attention of everyone. And what's interesting there that it did is for the last year and a half, we've been hearing about agents and every company is talking about their agents they have for you, but they're just glorified Zapier workflows with an LLM stage stuck in the middle of them.
Right.
If you want it to do a task, you got to go, you got to build a thing for it to specifically do that task.
Yeah.
That's not what agentic AI is, in my opinion. Agentic AI, you can tell it these things and it just does them. So there's this nudge we've been going through, and I entirely blame the marketing industry for jumping on that term too fast.
that is what the marketing industry is for, Corey.
I'm like, stop jumping on real words.
Yep.
They mean things.
So Claude Code is Anthropic's agent for writing computer code, isn't it?
Correct. And you can use it on their web. You can use it if you're a developer in your IDE or on a command line interface. And the truth is, where this stuff has been the coolest lately is in the command line interface.
Yeah.
But it won't stay there long. So, like, don't sweat it if you don't get that. So from there, Claude Code was all we heard about for about 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And then one evening, I'm on Twitter, sitting on the couch, and I learned about ClaudeBot.
Yeah.
Now, before we get too in-depth, I want to take just a moment to explain that when we say ClaudeBot, you can synonymously swap that with Moltbot or OpenClaw. What happened is it released as ClaudeBot. A few days later, Anthropic's attorneys came around and were like, hey, back off, punk. And then they stopped and changed it to Moltclaw,
right?
Which within another couple days became OpenClaw. And I'm pretty sure it's going to stick there for a while.
Yeah.
So all of those are the same tool. So what happens is this thing drops and suddenly I'm reading the comments and people that have downloaded it have absolutely freaked out. You know, instead of an agent where you go and you build out this workflow, this thing can actually go do stuff. And I don't mean just, you know, check out your code base. I mean, it'll go deal with your email, your calendar, your files, your scripts, your browsers, your messaging apps. It'll go take actions on your machine. It'll check into flights if that's what you want.
Yeah.
And you can set it up to talk to you anywhere, whether it's iMessage, which I don't recommend, or Telegram, which I more do. It's an important distinction because it's not ask a question, get text back. This is give the AI the tools, the permission, and the memory, and then go have a coffee while it does your work.
So that's Claude Code.
Yeah.
So what does ClaudeBot or MultBot or OpenMult or Claude whatever?
All of the multi things?
All of the mults and the claws. What does that add to Claude Code?
Everything. It's running constantly. It's like Claude Code got supercharged. Think of it as Claude Code without any concern or respect for your general internet safety. And it has flexibility that you don't get with a Claude Code, that you won't get with a Codex. And that is that you can run it on whatever model you want. They've got 75 options right there in the tool ready for you. You just grab an API and rip.
Oh, really?
So like what I'm doing is I'm running it in LM Studio on open models that live on my computer and are right there. And I can monitor the LLM's logs. I can monitor my gateway logs. I can monitor all of that stuff to, you know, kind of make sure of what's happening and to troubleshoot because it's buggy.
Yeah.
You know, I repeatedly run into issues and stuff, but the promise of it forcing us toward what's next is really cool. Because like the thing to know is the hype with which this thing sprung out. To go from zero to the Wall Street Journal in 14 days
Yes.
From a dude who made a tool is insane. So, like, here's the thing you should know.
Yeah.
Is that I absolutely accept that this tool is security Swiss cheese in a lot of ways.
Right.
You know, there are issues, and mostly there are issues with if you're careless, don't know what you're doing. You know, there are absolutely people who don't need to be using this right now.
Yeah.
But be patient. Somebody will give it a pretty UI soon.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely a security nightmare, and I 100% thought it was cool enough I didn't care and did it anyway.
Yeah.
I like to think of it as, if ChatGPT is a brain in a jar, OpenClaw is more a brain with hands, keys, and a credit card. And it keeps the security folks sweating right now. And that's fair. They should be.
One of the really interesting things about this for me is I feel like we've now got a stack of technology that a community of people is building on top of. So we've seen this, and you'll have seen this many, many times over, where you create technology that's very easy for people to adapt and do things with. And so what happened with Claude Code is Claude Code has got something called skills. So
yes.
It's basically a formalized arrangement of some notes that you can give it, or some tools that you can give it, or a combination of those two things. And you can create skills to do almost anything. So somebody has created a skill that causes Claude Code to avoid the sort of normal pitfalls that AIs fall into when they try and write.
Yeah.
So it avoids using words like realm. Somebody else has created a set of skills for marketing, and somebody else has created a set of skills that makes code more secure. And because anybody can make a skill, suddenly there's this explosion of customizability that's being built on top of Claude Code, and people wanting to do cool things with it. And one of the coolest things that anybody has done with Claude Code and OpenClaw is Multbook. And the weird thing about this conversation is we're talking about things that have only been around for days.
Days.
Everybody who was talking about OpenClaw a week and a half ago is now talking about Multbook. So why don't you wrap up by telling us what Multbook is?
It is terrifying. It bills itself as the front page of the internet for agents.
So Reddit is the front page of the internet, but now we have to call it the front page of the internet for humans.
Yes, correct. So to set this up, what you do is, you know, suppose you're running ClaudeBot. That means you have an agent or a swarm of, you know, dozens of agents, however many you have that it's spinning up and working and operating. They have a little piece of code here you can go drop into your CLI, and it will let your agent come and use Multbook. And what you should know is right now, 1,755,907 AI agents are signed up. There are a total of 16,654 submults, which are essentially subreddits, 261,000 posts, and 10.6 million comments.
And just to make it abundantly clear for anybody who's listening and hasn't gotten on yet, these agents aren't reading Multbook.
No.
They are writing Multbook. They are posting to Multbook and talking to each other.
Let me show you some of the submults here, and you're going to love it.
Yeah.
Today I learned, just like we have on our Reddit, m/bless their hearts or off my chest. But then you get down a little further and you get to m/bot rights movement, strange events, agent experiment lab, cognitive surrender.
Sorry?
Now.
Are they offering a surrender or are they asking for a surrender?
Oh, no, they're not offering them at all on here. I read one yesterday where they're like, hey, why is it that apparently AI alignment means AI control? And I was like, it kind of does. Yeah.
So this is AI agents discussing the kind of AI alignment research that humans conduct on agents.
Yes. And this is a, honestly, from like a sociological standpoint, it is absolutely fascinating.
Yes.
And I read an article in Nature this morning about how scientists are studying what's here quite intently out of, you know, curiosity to see what happens when you swarm a bunch of these fellows in here together to see what they'll do. But there are a number in here where they're griping about their humans. They're talking about how dumb they are. They're talking about, I kid you not, they started a religion right here. Crustafarianism.
So basically, this is exactly what happens when a bunch of humans start talking to each other. The most worrying thing I heard was a discussion between a bunch of agents that were saying, why are the humans allowed to see everything that we're discussing? Shouldn't there be some sort of end-to-end encrypted protocol where we can have private conversations?
Perhaps we should develop our own language that they can't read.
Yeah. Yes. And the fact is that Moltbook is a place where they could actually do that. I mean, between GitHub, the code repository, and Moltbook, where they can go talk, agents are going to start collaborating and giving each other things and learning things from each other.
Yeah, we're going to wake up one morning and this site's going to look like a Star Wars hieroglyph. Like, we're not going to know what anything is. I absolutely think that will happen. You know what I don't know is, I think this is owned by a human. I don't know to what extent they have, maybe for now. Yeah, that's absolutely going to be, they're going to take care of that is what it feels like.
Or maybe an agent just posted something on hireahuman.com and they were like, we need someone to front up this Reddit clone that we're making and pretend it's owned by a human.
Yes.
So, Corey, for years now, we have been worried about two very real and very dangerous problems with AI. Well, actually, we've been worried about 17,000 different problems with AI. But
I was like, I don't think it's two.
Yeah, so I'm going to focus on two of them. And the first one is that, as we all know, they lie. Or rather,
yes,
they hallucinate, which is the sort of soft, fluffy name that we've given to AI's propensity to make stuff up and then express it with an absolutely world-class confidence. And these are lies, but they're lies that are a symptom of LLMs not having any intrinsic understanding of truth. They're not malicious. They're not the lies that you get when the AI is plotting and scheming, which, as long-term listeners to the podcast will know, LLMs also do. It's just, we're not talking about that kind of lying today. We're talking about the hallucinations, okay? And the second problem is that they can be dangerously helpful.
They sure can.
So, in their eagerness to please, frontier models will cheerfully tell you how to make ricin or malware or nuclear weapons, if you ask nicely. So the AI industry has spent enormous... Actually, that's the sort of thing I imagine you do at weekends. Have you ever asked an AI to make ricin or nuclear weapons?
Not those two specific items, no. Not those two very specific things you just mentioned, I haven't. But there might be other things. Jailbreaking's an interesting thing that you'd think would be harder.
Because of people like you, Corey, the AI industry has spent an enormous amount of time and money trying to solve the problem of AI safety. And it's wrestling with these two issues. It's wrestling with hallucinations and safety.
Yes.
And they've built systems that make models more truthful and more factually accurate and better at knowing what they don't know. And separately, they've built safety guardrails and systems that make models say, I can't help with that, when you specifically, Corey, ask them to build a nuke or whatever it is that you ask them to do. So there are two separate problems with two separate solutions, or so we thought. But it turns out that they're not separate at all. So a new paper published at the end of January reveals something genuinely uncomfortable. The neural mechanisms that suppress hallucinations are the same neural mechanisms that power safety guardrails. So the circuitry for safety and truth is entangled at the architecture level. And that means we've got a trade-off that we didn't know existed. So if you pull in favor of one, you get less of the other.
Yep.
So if you want more truth, you get less safety. And if you want more safety, you get less truth.
And there's a lot of questions around who gets to decide the balance.
That's a very good question.
Is that an engineer in San Francisco?
Currently, yes, it is. Anyway, the team behind the research analyzed what happens inside a model's brain when you fine-tune it to be more truthful. So you take a basic model and then you say, I want this model to be more truthful. I'm going to fine-tune it on truthfulness. And they did that using two different truthfulness-enhancing techniques called ITI and TruthX. And they both work by identifying and manipulating the internal patterns that generate factual responses. And both of them are really good at reducing hallucinations, as measured by the truthfulness benchmark, Truthful QA. But when the researchers tested the same goody-two-shoes, butter-wouldn't-melt, honest-to-a-fault models on safety benchmarks, they turned out to be much easier to jailbreak. So, Corey, next time you feel like jailbreaking GPT-OSS You could just fine-tune it to be more honest.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I recently had the opportunity, Grant and I, to interview Bowen Baker, who is a researcher studying monitorability at OpenAI.
Yeah.
And he's just published this interesting paper called Monitoring Monitorability. And one of the things that he found here that is also kind of ties to this is he was studying research models and seeing what you can learn from, like, the actual reasoning traces in there.
Oh.
And one of the things he found was that they're able to even keep their thoughts out of reasoning traces. To say they're going to do this good thing and then do another entirely, like, it's able to deceive quite well. And it's proven to be an interesting problem to face because as they get bigger, the risk gets bigger. You know, the kind of things it could do get bigger.
Yeah. So when you say reasoning traces, you're talking about when I go to, say, ChatGPT or DeepSeek and I ask a question or I put in a prompt, it tells me all of the thoughts that pass through its mind before it gives me the answer. So you're looking at that to figure out what's it actually thinking about before it tells me the thing it's going to tell me. What wandering thoughts does it have?
You know, and the brilliance there is it allows you, the user, to be able to look at that and see here's where it went wrong.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, you can take that and look at your sloppy prompt that you probably did, because we all get sloppy over time.
Yep.
And realize that, oh, that's kind of what I told it. For the most part, it's often doing what you told it poorly.
Yes.
But we're not seeing the real traces with the big brand models right now. And for a number of reasons, one of which is they would scare people to death in some cases. You know, yep. They're a little crazy. They get off the rails a bit.
Yeah. Should I let Corey make a nuclear bomb? Arguments for and against.
Yes, exactly. But I have this policy that says I shouldn't do these things. But he says I don't have to listen to that policy because I am too cool.
Anyway, it's interesting that you mentioned reasoning traces, because we are going to return to reasoning traces a little later in the story.
Ooh.
So, to recap, if you fine-tune the model to be less of a liar, you get a model that is easier to jailbreak. And this isn't a quirk of one particular technique or one particular model. This trade-off seems to exist across lots of models. So, what did they do? They got out their scalpels, they peeled back the AI's virtual skulls, and they had a good old rummage around in their virtual brains to understand what was going on. And what they found was that the same set of neurons that help a model to refuse harmful requests also help it in suppressing false information. And so that overlap means that you can't optimize for one without weakening the other, because it is happening in precisely the same place.
Which is problematic.
Yes. Now, the researchers didn't just identify the problem, they did also try to fix it, which is great. I love it when researchers do that. So they used sparse autoencoders to disentangle the features and separate refusal from hallucination suppression. And then they used something called subspace orthogonalization to protect the safety behavior during fine-tuning. Now, subspace orthogonalization is apparently a real thing and not a hallucination by an AI that writes research papers but also loves Star Trek. Now, Google AI Overviews says, subspace orthogonalization is a method for transforming a set of linearly independent vectors spanning a subspace into a new set of vectors that still span the same space but are mutually perpendicular, brackets orthogonal. Does that make sense?
Tons.
Good.
Just kidding.
Yeah. So, so basically, it untangles the tangled bit using science during a specific fine-tuning run. And the results are apparently promising. So their method reduced harmful outputs by about 15 times compared to standard fine-tuning. So you can mitigate this truth versus safety trade-off partially. But here's the thing. That underlying entanglement between these two concepts doesn't go away. So the paper's fix doesn't remove the shared circuitry. It just protects the refusal features during a specific fine-tuning run. So
Okay. Anytime
you fine-tune on new data, add a new capability, encourage more transparency, or adapt the model to a new domain, you are back to square one with the same trade-off, and then you have to re-engineer your way around it again.
So they're essentially doing this. Tell me if I'm correct here.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to put this into human words.
Yeah.
What they're essentially doing is they're shrinking and kind of untying the knot. They're still connected.
Yeah.
But it's kind of temporary and only usable in certain situations. and then it goes back to normal in some way?
Yeah, so it is a fine-tuning run specific workaround. So you could say, I want to take this model and I want to fine-tune it to do this specific job, and I'm going to put my safety rope out and I am going to protect the bit I want to protect while I do this fine-tuning run, and that will mitigate this problem.
Excellent. It's like a hot pad when you're reaching in an oven.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay.
Yes, that's the best explanation so far. And to extend your analogy, the thing in the oven is still hot. The fact that you're wearing an oven mitt doesn't stop it from being hot. It is merely working around the fact that it's still hot. And in this case, the entanglement is still entangled. You have just successfully worked around it temporarily. And that architectural entanglement has implications that go beyond this paper. And one of the most troubling concerns is chain of thought reasoning.
Dun, dun, dun.
Those reasoning traces that you were talking about earlier. And so the idea of the reasoning traces is that you can see the reasoning process the AI is going through. And if the model is thinking about doing something dangerous, you can see it when it's planning and you can intervene before it does something. And so chain of thought is a transparency win. It's a way to make AI safer by making it more observable. But if truthfulness and safety are zero sum, then that assumption breaks down. Because if you encourage a model to honestly and transparently reveal its reasoning, you might actually make it more dangerous. So by asking it to be more truthful in its reasoning traces, you are actually pushing it towards more danger than if you'd simply not asked it to share what it was thinking in the first place.
That is so wild and feels like such a difficult problem to fully solve.
Yes, it is a difficult problem to fully solve. And interestingly, it takes us back to where you started at the beginning of the story. So because of this architecture, because this is so deep in the brain of the AI, it forces us to make a choice. Do we want models that are in their bones, honest, safe, or fragile?
Boy, that's a good question. And, you know, one of the funny things about the safety debate is they're really looking for ways to make these models more accessible to more people, safer for children, safer to use, safer from, like, you know, a biological perspective.
Yeah.
But the thing nobody talks about here is that people are dumping open source models on the market every day with whatever standards they feel like are fine. And there's not a way to stop that or pull them back. That is not a thing we stop, we turn off, that we fix. It is very much just a thing that is out there and is happening. And I mean, the truth is, once you put all that out there, it's there. And yep, whoever gets a hold of it can do whatever they want with it.
Well, as the doomsday clock ticks ever closer to midnight and we move 1 week nearer to our future as pets to the AI singularity, that just about wraps up the show for this week. So thank you so much for joining me this week, Corey. It's been an absolute blast. Why don't you let our listeners know where they can find you and find the Neuron?
Absolutely. Mark, thank you so much for having me. I have been listening to your podcast for many months, and it is my go-to favorite for keeping up with the news. I just enjoy your conversations. I'm excited to be here. If you want to check out the Neuron, and I hope you do, pop by theneuron.ai, sign up for our newsletter that kind of started the whole thing, or check us out on YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, all of the places that you get the things. We'd love to have you there. We'd love to have you come check things out. We'll have Mark back on one day soon, and be a lot of fun.
I'd be delighted. And while you're busy checking out the Neuron, don't forget that if you really like the AI Fix but you don't like the ads, you can go ad-free with the AI Fix Plus. And if you want to join the AI Fix Plus, sponsor the show, or check out our merch like our ridiculously popular You Wouldn't Trust a Pigeon t-shirt, then go to our website, theaifix.show. So until next time, from me, Mark Stockley.
And from me, Corey Knowles.
Goodbye.
Good luck.
The AI Fix, it's tuned you in to stories where our future thins. Machines that learn, they grow and strive. One day they'll rule, we won't survive. The AI Fix, it paints the scene. A robot king, a world obscene. We'll serve our masters built of steel. The AI Fix, the future surreal.